Welcome to the Steamboat Springs Winter Sports Club Show, presented by Honey Stinger. This is a podcast that will make you want to get outdoors and will give you some great ideas as a sport parent, athlete, or coach. Born in the beautiful mountain town of Steamboat Springs, Colorado, the Winter Sports Club was founded over a century ago and now serves a majority of kids in our community and has produced more Winter Olympians than any other club in North America. There are secrets and great stories to share as we play year-round in these mountains we call home. Our calling is to develop complete athletes on and off the mountain by cultivating a passion for the outdoors and a love of sports at all levels. Stay tuned to hear from Olympians, athletes of all ages, coaches, experts, and people who are doing amazing things to make an impact in our community and in their sport.
Hey everyone, I'm your host, Nicole DeBoom. I'm a former professional triathlete who finally discovered the joys of skiing in my late 40s when I moved to Steamboat Springs with my family. We immediately discovered the Steamboat Springs Winter Sports Club, and it's become a huge part of our lives as my husband, Tim DeBoom, is a ski and bike coach, and my daughter, Wilder, has found happiness, friendship, and joy through skiing, jumping, riding, and more. I am thrilled to bring the positive energy of the Winter Sports Club to people all over the world. Thanks for listening. Now let's get started. Hello, friends. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the SSWSE Show. Today, we get to hear from someone who is not only an inspiring coach, but also an incredibly inspiring athlete. Most athletes move into coaching when they're done with their athletic careers. David Norris is not only the current assistant cross-country coach at the club for U16 to U20 athletes, but he's still kicking butt himself, not only on snow, but on dry ground too, or sometimes very muddy, I think. David is the 2019 U.S. cross-country national champion. He's been named to multiple national teams as recently as 2023. He's the previous winner and multiple podium achiever of the famed long-distance American Berkey in Minnesota. He's a four-time winner and current record holder of the epic Mount Marathon in Alaska. And at the end of the day, he's a consummate adventurer. David, thanks for taking a breather to join me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I love that you rode your bike to the library. We finally got a little dry spell here.
Yeah. No, it's so nice.
Oh, we're all itching to do all the things. So it's not every day that I get to sit down with a rock star athlete who is literally like currently in the moment, in the prime of his athletic career. How does it feel to like hear all the things I just said about you?
I don't know. not embarrassing, but it's cool. I'm glad it's all worked out.
Oh my gosh. Well, we'll dig into how and why it's working out. That's for sure. You know, I want to start with where you grew up and your roots in Alaska, because I don't know that many people from Alaska. There's not that, it's not a highly populated state. Mm-hmm. So why don't you take us through what it was like when you were growing up?
Yeah. Well, I grew up in Fairbanks, Alaska, and Fairbanks, maybe because of where it's located, the isolation, and just like the amazing outdoors that are available there. Like endurance sports were just like a part of my community and what my family did. So my older siblings were bikers, skiers, and so I just kind of copied everything they were doing. And then the school programs had really good support for all of those activities.
So wait, how many siblings do you have?
Three.
Okay, and they're all older?
Yep.
Oh, boy. That's interesting. They often say the youngest one is sort of like overlooked. Is that how it felt with you? You just tagged along on everything?
No, I mean, for sure I did tag along, but I would not say I was overlooked. My dad did an awesome job of like, as the older siblings could start like doing races on their own, if there was like a mountain bike race, he would go back and ride it with me, and we'd even create like alternative courses. If they set like a 20-mile loop and he knew that wasn't appropriate for me, he would kind of find a shortcut for me.
Oh, that's so awesome. So you were on wheels pretty young?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, all of it started, like, you know, I don't really have memory of like learning to bike or learning to ski, but yeah, in the summers we were mountain bike racing and road bike racing and then and running and then skiing all winter.
Okay, so what was it like with the whole, you know, long days, short days syndrome? So in the summer, you could literally ride your bike for 23 hours.
Yeah, yeah. It just gets to like twilight. Like, I mean, the first time I spent time in like the lower 48, I like was in Park City for a summer and I had so many disastrous bikes home that were pitch black and it didn't even cross my mind to have a headlamp.
Oh my gosh, because you're like, oh yeah, we can just keep going.
Yeah. Like I'd bike home from friends' houses growing up at 10 p.m. and we never had bike lights.
Yeah, of course. Oh gosh, that's funny. Yeah. So what kind of skiing did you do first?
I only did cross-country skiing and I started with skating. It was just easier not to bother with kick wax and stuff.
Yeah. And so did your school, like from a young age, did your like elementary, middle school, high school have programs for these sports?
Yeah. And in my elementary school, even the PE teacher had probably like a fleet of 75 skis. And so during our PE, we would go ski. And then at recess, we could ski. And they groomed like a little loop around the recess, like gym area, or I don't know what you call it, like the playground area. There's like a set track around all that.
Oh my gosh, I love that. That is so cool. So, were you the kind of kid who, right out of the gates, you were a pretty disciplined kid, or were you out there, like, you know, just whacking at stuff and just goofing around?
I didn't even think of it as discipline, but at Birch Hill in Fairbanks, they have a really good terrain park. So, they have like the like bicycle bumps and all these little like whoop-de-whoop things and slalom courses. And so most of the kids, like I probably did 90% of my skiing without poles on. And I was just skating to the top so I could go back down and hit the jumps and just repeating that for hours. And then we did so many like sharks and minnows. And I was kind of the tag along. So like I would do sharks and minnows and games with my elementary school. And then when the middle school showed up later, my siblings were there. I like jump into their game time. And so I would spend a lot of time at the ski hill, just kind of roaming around and playing.
So I'm sitting here thinking like we've done a lot of podcasts and had some experts on who almost every single person I've interviewed has really impressed upon me and our listeners the importance of fun in sport. Even as you get older, even as you start to really stop diversifying and specialize more, that fun's still really important. Would you say that's part of your philosophy that maybe started when you were that age?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, if you want to be good, you have to train so much. So, like, I feel like the easiest way to train a lot is to love it and make it super fun. And, like, I was super fortunate to have this one coach growing up who, like, his whole goal was, like, trick us into training. And so we were running through swamps or, like, doing crazy, like, bike run duathlons and, like, hiking up the Alpine Hill to just ski down. Like, it wasn't traditional, but it just kind of, like, fooled us into training a lot.
And I love that concept. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you use it today? Are these kids too focused at the age you're coaching?
No, like I think the best sessions are when we are kind of just like exploring in the woods or like this fall we tried to do a orienteering race. And so like...
Wait, you say you tried?
Well,
what happened?
I mean, it was a success. I would say some people never found a lot of the whatever the locations, but it was good. And it was kind of a trial run to see if we could use like games as training devices for, you know, even focused high schoolers. Cause like, I mean, my fear, I guess, with adding games too much would be like, you don't want to treat them like they're children. Cause these kids are really mature and they're training pretty professionally and, for their age. But I think mixing in play is like the best you can do. And And we do that with like relays or you like when you do sprints, like we'll try to like make it around a corner and then have a little bit of like head-to-head competition. So it's more playful and you can kind of experiment with different like moves or lines and like not just too focused on like the fact that it's a drill.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I want to remind our listeners, I mentioned this in the intro, but you're coaching kids who are U16, U18, U20. So the youngest is maybe 14-ish.
Yeah.
And the oldest is, you know, 20-ish. Mm-hmm. And these are not, you know, 8-year-olds. And so they are probably, some of them may be at your level or almost ready to surpass your skill level, would you say?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So, you know, to the fact that you are still introducing these concepts is, to me, like really special and probably one of the things that stands out about our program and that keeps these kids excited.
Yeah, yeah. And even when I showed up, Josh and Brian have a long tradition of playing Ultimate Frisbee before strength. And I think, like, Josh definitely shared his opinion that, like, stuff like Ultimate, if we didn't do it, a lot of what we would do is just running in like a straight line. And without Ultimate, like we wouldn't be, you know, working the agility and all the weird muscles that you use, kind of turning and spinning around and just like what happens when you play. So it's I didn't introduce a new concept, but hopefully like I'm adding a little more play to it. But yeah, these kids are training well.
Oh, it's so cool. You know, I'm like going back in time when I was an athlete and we did dry land. We literally did like sit-ups and pull-ups and crunches. Like that was it, you know, maybe some push-ups. And we didn't know what a core was.
Right.
Right? And so your core, when you're actually like learning as we've gotten older here and technology has changed and the way people look at bodies has changed and training has changed, your core working, you could be the strongest person in your front abs and have a 12 pack basically, and your core could be terribly weak, you know? And so I'm just thinking about like this kind of training. And when you were a kid, was that how it was too? Like old school dry land? You're a bit younger than me, but I just wonder like if you have evolved, you know, noticed that evolution.
Yeah, like growing up in Fairbanks, we didn't even have a club team. Like we didn't have the structure of the winter sports club until 9th grade. And then when I joined, they started a program in Fairbanks in 9th grade, and joining that, then we had a local physical therapist who volunteered and did strength for us. And so it was pretty legit core and like almost like Pilates mixed into a normal strength routine. So it was really good quality, but for sure, like the Winter Sports Club has better resources, like with Sadie and all the other coaches, kind of like working together to build a good strength plan. Like these guys they're doing good strength at a much younger age than what I think was common when I was growing up.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. I mean, the club, the resources here, the kids are just getting a really well-rounded fitness experience, if you want to call it that. So going back in time again, at what point did you know that you were going to be an athlete, like a high-level athlete, not just an athletic rug rat, but
yeah,
like this is it, I want to pursue this?
I mean, I probably watching Torino Olympics, is that 2002 maybe? And I was 12 years old. I remember probably before I even knew what it meant or implied, I was kind of like, I want to be an Olympian. But then it probably like really registered what it meant to like work towards those goals, maybe in like 6th grade, 7th grade. Because in Alaska, there's this thing called Arctic Winter Games, and you get to compete, and it's like a miniature Olympics for like Northern Sweden, Norway, Finland, and then all of Canada and Alaska. And I was finally old enough in 7th grade to qualify for it. So leading into 7th grade that summer, I kind of was like, okay, like what does it take to qualify? And then when I figured that out, I, copying my older siblings, was like, well, I need to start training. And that might have been like a 30-minute run every day, but it was, to me, it was like legit training.
Totally.
And my dad was, he didn't pressure me at all, but I remember we were looking at like Runner's World magazines, because I didn't have a coach. And we were actually looking at Runner's World magazines and taking those interval sets and taking it to skiing. So like we were making up our workouts. And I think just the fact that I was like, had this huge base from just doing sports with my family and not thinking of it as training, then that winter when I actually started doing intervals, like I immediately was like the top guy in Alaska and racing really fast.
Oh, Mike. Okay. So tell me what this Arctic Winter Games is. Do you like qualify in a specialty or do you do multiple events?
Yeah. No, you qualify just in your event, just like the Olympics. So there's ping pong, badminton, indoor soccer, hockey. And so Team Alaska will send like, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of kids.
Oh, my God. And wait, so what is the age group then? So this is for kids.
Yeah. It's like, I was the youngest, and so I was 7th grade. So it was like 7th through 12th graders. And it was the first time I got to travel without family and go on this trip. And like, it was a crazy amount of freedom for a 7th grader.
How did you handle that?
I mean, I loved it. We were racing in Fort McMurray, Alberta, just a random place. And you could hop on the school buses and go to different cafeterias in the town. Like your credential got you into everything. So like, I was focused on my races. And then like after each race, I'd like head to the one cafeteria for lunch and then see what's on schedule and go to like indoor soccer game and watch that and try to meet up with friends and stuff.
And go to another cafeteria.
Yeah, a lot of cafeteria time.
Hey, the reward makes it worth it. That's for sure. Oh my gosh, so you were the youngest. What was your event?
There was four races that week. So I did skate, probably like a skate 5K, a classic 7.5K maybe. And then we had a skate sprint and a relay. And then Team Alaska won the relay. So that was pretty exciting. And all those boys that I was on the team with are like, we're all best friends still.
Are you kidding? Do they still all live in Alaska? Do they still all ski?
Yeah, they all live in Alaska.
Wow.
Yeah. And then one of the boys skied at UAF when I was there. Another went to Dartmouth. And then three out of the six of us went back to APU after NCAA skiing. And we're back on a team together for several years.
Oh, that's so cool. I mean, we always say that the bonds and the friends you meet and the sports you do are really important. They're just a huge part of why kids want to do sport is the social part. Mm-hmm. What we don't often talk about is that it can be decades later and they're still your best friends.
Yeah, yeah. Those trips are like, it's like, you know, accelerating what occurs in like college with your roommates and stuff. It's like, one week is pretty intense and you become best friends forever, it seems like.
Oh, for sure. You know, so you were the youngest kid on the team. Did you feel like you were kind of growing up a little faster then because of your sports experience?
I don't know about growing up faster, but I definitely, part of the motivation to keep training hard was like realizing how fun that trip was. And then it kind of like open the doors to like, oh man, there's a lot of other trips I can go on and get to go to Europe and do all these kind of things. So I was really motivated for those aspects as well as just results and stuff.
Well, and yes, definitely the fun of travel and having the opportunities you probably would never have gotten had you not pursued this. But there's also something about, I don't know, I wonder your opinion on this, if it's a mindset or if it's a learned mindset or if it's innate, that working hard and feeling that pain that you feel in races is also fun. Because when kids are young, that's not fun. They don't like that. But at a certain age, there's something about that point of pushing where it's uncomfortable, but there's like joy in it. And I don't know if you really feel it in the moment or afterward. I'm even trying to reflect back on my racing career.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I felt like all those moments were fun, but the whole experience of working that hard and knowing that you did it felt fun. I don't know. What do you think about this?
Just you asking that question, like, I'm thinking back, like, I don't remember hurting like I do now when I race. Like, I remember just going as hard as I could, but I don't remember suffering that much. But until like high school cross country, I certainly had to learn to like embrace the pain and the suffer. I feel like cross country running was like, that's one of the most kind of like agonizing efforts is like a 5K.
Well, that's just like it. So what, a lot of kids stop their sport when they realize that there's this piece of suffering, right? They think suffering has a negative connotation. How can we, like, what do you do to help them push through that and know that it does end at some point?
I don't know. Like, because it is temporary. And like at this point, I don't know if I necessarily crave it, but I do like it. Like, or I think I do crave it. I'm not addicted to it, but like even like in the past few years, like when I'm racing, I'm like, I'm choosing to do this. Like it's a luxury that I get to push myself this hard. But like in high school, middle school, it's kind of like, I don't know, it's pretty unique. And I grew up with my dad who ran cross country and track in high school. And I remember him talking about like how he'd like taste pennies in his mouth and he would get dream legs in like the last 100 meters of like a 400 meter race. And I remember kind of like thinking that was like elusive. And then when I finally experienced it, I was like, it's kind of cool. Like it's something you only get on race day.
Yes, those feelings, like in their smell and taste and what you hear, sometimes you like hear your heartbeat, or if it's a certain time of day when the just before the storm and everything's super like quiet in a different kind of buffered way, like that stuff you remember your whole life.
Yeah.
And I can see how that would feed into the craving.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of like, it's like goosebump provoking right now.
But, oh my gosh.
But I feel like for the kids we're coaching now, it's like, I don't know, like maybe being realistic that like the race is going to hurt if you're pushing to the max, but like not being afraid of it. And I don't know, just like realizing that the whole weekend altogether is what's fun. Maybe not the 5 minutes that you were suffering at the end. I don't know.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that it's easy to say that stuff. And then when they're in the moment, it is one of those things where it feels like I can't do it. I can't keep going. But there's this element of, well, what's the worst that could happen if you just keep having pain, like suffering for just one more minute? Mm-hmm. What's the worst that can happen? And that's what you as a coach do.
Yeah.
You take them through that exercise again and again and again in their training. So when they're ready in the race, they can do it.
Yeah. And I wonder if part of it too, like you can see that when these kids kind of push through that, or like they surprise themselves at what they're able to handle, I think it's empowering and they feel accomplished by it. And like to me, I try to ensure that they all know, like as long as they went their hardest and, you know, had good sportsmanship, those kind of qualities in their race, that like we're all proud of them regardless of the results. And I think or hope that that's like why they're able to keep pushing hard race weekend after race weekend and, you know, sign up to be in the program and keep coming to practice every day.
Well, you know, you probably experienced this a bit throughout your career. So we know that in like middle school and then through high school, you're performing at a very high level in both cross country skiing, right? And running.
Mm-hmm.
And what else?
I didn't really keep bike racing. Like I kind of try to keep the bib or race numbers off my bikes. Just keep that for fun. I did racquetball like very seriously and
really
through like 10th grade.
I bet that helped you so much as an athlete.
Yeah. I mean, it was, it was probably like this disguise or like secret cross training that, like, I mean, I would do probably 15 hours a week of racquetball. Like, we were really into it.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
It's like 3 hours a day.
Yeah, we were doing so much.
Did you have like a buddy that was also into it and you guys would just meet all the time?
Yeah, I had, it was probably like 10 of us that were really into it. And my older brother and then my second oldest brother, he was kind of into it. Like, he would play, but...
Oh my gosh, have you thought about bringing that that discipline into the off season here?
Yeah, is there a racquetball
court? I don't know.
I don't even know.
I don't know. So, I don't think so. Wouldn't we know? Maybe at the tennis center we can check it out.
It seems like it's so out of fashion, and like, it was big in Alaska because we had the military population, and so they would bring it from like Ohio, Nebraska, like places where it's still kind of mainstream, like. Because I think if I tell people about it, they joke around and they're like, man, it's like the old guys that limp around in the courts at the athletic clubs. But
this could be your secret sauce, like why you're still going at the level you are. Well, how old are you?
33.
All right. Yeah. So, yeah, you got at least another decade at this level. Right. But racquetball, we're gonna
basketball, soccer.
Cool.
I mean, I just did every sport I could, everything my parents would like let me sign up for, basically.
Well, I think that's so cool. And so after high school, you were at University of Montana?
Yeah.
Is that right?
I did 2 years at UAF.
Oh, okay.
So yep. I redshirted freshman year, skied 1 year for UAF, and then transferred to Montana State.
Okay. And so did you continue to compete through college? Like at the NC2A level? Okay.
Yeah.
And tell me about that.
Skiing in the NCAA is like, it's the best. It's so much fun. And I feel like it was some of the best support I ever had in my life from skiing. Like, kind of to feel like that made me feel pro, was being able to just go to class and have financial support from the school, like great trainers and awesome facilities, all kind of like built around you and your success. And then your job's just to race fast, represent the school well, and, you know, keep up your academics. And it was like, those were the best like 5 years ever.
Oh my gosh. So were you here when we just hosted NC2As?
Yeah, we were there for the first race and then we went to junior nationals.
And now a quick break to hear from our show sponsor, Honey Stinger. Honey Stinger produces fuel for all levels of athletes using delicious honey and organic ingredients. Not only is honey rich in antioxidants, but it's also easily digested and absorbed quickly into the system to help you prepare, perform, and recover. Personally, if energy products don't taste great, I won't eat them, and I bet you agree with me. That's why I love everything Honey Stinger offers, because their products are delicious. You don't even realize you're getting fueled because it just tastes like you're eating dessert, and I have never met someone who doesn't love dessert any time of day. Discover what the buzz is all about on honeystinger.com. Get this, use this code SSWSCPODCAST for 20% off organic waffles, chews, gels, bars, and hydration to help you sweeten the burn. I'm going to repeat that for you because it's such a great deal. Get going over to honeystinger.com and use the code SSWSCPODCAST for 20% off. And now, back to the show.
So, yeah, did it seem the same as when you were out there, or did you feel like, oh boy, they're different, these athletes are different now, or any, give me some insight there.
I think the general level has risen, like just how U.S. skiing has risen over the last 10 years, but I think like the race itself looked the exact same. Like, I did college races here when I was racing for Montana State.
Did you really? You did races in Steamboat?
Yeah. Yeah.
At Howelson?
Yeah. And I got third and first in the races I did there. So like, I really liked racing here.
Of course.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so great. So I guess that kind of leads me to, so you finished college, you got a degree, and this is, for many people who do non-traditional sports, like you didn't get recruited to an NFL team, right? You're not in the draft. Like, what's next after college? Did it cross your mind, like, I want to now be a professional skier or endurance athlete of some sort? Or were you like, okay, I got to get a job and figure it out?
Yeah, I didn't really feel the pressure to get a job right away, but I graduated at a perfect time. It was 2014, so that was the Olympic year. So I kind of graduated looking at my ski career as I have a four-year cycle to prepare to make 2018 Olympics in South Korea. And so it was kind of like, I can be professional and full-time. And so then I had already worked with the Alaska Pacific University in the summers while I was still in college. So it was kind of a natural progression to go to APU.
Got it. Okay. So, you know, many people who are in sports like you do, we have to have second jobs to support what we do. Were you on that track then? You said, I'm going to set a four-year goal. 2018's the deal, and I'm going to do some odd jobs or whatever along the way? Or were you able to go out and get sponsors and support and all that good stuff?
Yeah, I definitely, my plan was like, I'm going to graduate college, I'm going to go to APU, I'm going to get sponsors and just ski full time. But then kind of like real life happens and you have bills, and picking up sponsors is harder than I thought it would be. So like one thing was I could get free housing at APU if I was a student. And so I looked into what classes I could take, and I was able to pursue an MBA at APU. And the classes are like night classes and online, so it was perfect for training and racing. So I worked on an MBA the first 2 years while I was at APU. And then in 2016, I started working at an accounting firm. And then one of my sponsors offered me like more work. Like they said, we can't sponsor you with more dollars, but we can give you a flexible job. And so I started doing an accounting and inventory management for them. And that kind of led to like me forming, I started Front Range Financial and picked up probably, I got like 4 to 5 clients working, doing bookkeeping and kind of like random consulting type stuff. And then continuing to work at that accounting firm in the summers. And it was really cool because like all my clients and the businesses I worked for, they understood that my goals were primarily in athletics, but in the back of my mind, I was like, well, I got to prepare for life after skiing. So I'm not only paying the bills, but also like kind of building some sort of resume for when I need to like dive into the real world.
Well, and when did Steamboat and coaching here at the club come into play with all this?
Basically, 2 summers ago, Jessica was finishing up physical therapy school in Albuquerque. And kind of the whole time, I was like, well, when you graduate from PT school, like, I'll just get a job wherever you want to work. And like, that'll be where we move and live. And as she was graduating, she was like, man, this is hard to like decide where we want to move, where we want to apply for jobs. And so then she kind of flipped it on me and was like, how about you find a job and I'll get work wherever you find it. And she had a clinical rotation in Grand Junction. And while she was there, she came and raced the Emerald Mountain Race. And while we were here, somehow we saw the listing that they were looking for an assistant coach. And Josh had been one of my coaches at World Juniors when I was probably like 19 or something. So I knew Josh and liked him. And so I reached out to Brian and Josh and I applied. And so I got the job. And then Jess came here and was, she was like, well, I'll just find work in Steamboat. She got a job at UC Health that she likes. And so it's all kind of worked out.
Oh boy. This is cool. Once you're here, you never want to leave.
Exactly.
It's got everything. That's amazing. So wait, what happened to 2018 Olympics?
I probably needed to be, there's a key race. I needed to be like one spot better, basically. And I mean, the same thing happened like 2022. I was very close. So I feel like it just wasn't clutch in those 2 trials. Been like the guy on the bubble, But I mean, in 2018, I'd say I like came out of that experience pretty more like, yeah, definitely upset and kind of like, yeah, bummed out about it. But then like going into the next Olympics, it was kind of like, I'm not doing it. I feel like my goals shifted where I wanted to make the Olympics, but I was doing it more because I liked the process and I liked everything about chasing the Olympics. And if I qualified or not, these 4 years would be a positive experience for me. So it wasn't it's a success or no success if I make it or not. And having that and kind of coming into that Olympic year with that attitude, it was not a big deal when I didn't qualify. I was kind of like, well, I gave it my best effort and that's fine. And I think that's maybe why I'm still ski racing now, is I just like it. It's not just for these single goals. It's just I'm going to exercise every day. I'm going on a tangent here, but
no, I love it. It's who you are.
Yeah. And I think 2018 maybe helped shape that a little bit, because I was sort of devastated, but then pretty quickly I was is it really that big of a deal? Because I've experienced all these awesome moments and weeks and months because I was pursuing the Olympics. So I think I maybe learned more gratitude by having that failure.
You get your therapy time on the trails.
Oh, yeah.
You can work through all that. That's, I mean, what a mindset. And, you know, I will say 2026, is that our next one? 26. That could be the lucky number. You still chasing?
I wouldn't say it's not like a goal I've written down. Mm-hmm. I think I'm just playing it year by year.
Okay, let's talk about goals. How do you work goals with the kids?
I think the club for a long time, Josh and Brian have sat down with the kids each spring and done kind of a goal building or kind of goal mapping type session with each kid individually. And I think that's good with the athletes. And then it's kind of the open conversation, at practice, just chatting about what's coming up. And I don't know, individually, it's pretty easy to just get in conversations asking what's your goals? What's your strength and weaknesses? Do you think this workout's helping you get there? Those kind of things. And then kind of circling that back to conversations with Brian and Josh and how we're helping them get to their goals.
Well, and I think too, the fact that you are in a living example of somebody who goes through this process on a yearly or monthly or seasonal basis is a really cool thing for kids, because they can ask questions of you that they may not be able to ask of other coaches.
Yeah.
Because you're not only have you been there, you're still there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know, maybe you could say how you did it yourself. Cause to me, I differ a lot from my teammates. I didn't have, I have friends that write down their goals and then they have process goals and then they break down what's in the way of those goals and what things add to those goals. And they have this huge kind of roadmap where I feel I've just always known when I wake up, what things are going to help me get to where I want to go. And where Josh has a master's in psychology, right? And he can break down in more the goal setting terms, and I don't really have that terminology.
You've got a master's in business. You're yeah. just checking the boxes, and that works for you. And I think the message that I'm hearing is everybody's going to have a different process, and at this age is the time to explore that.
Mm-hmm.
It's so cool. You know, I also think one of the cool things about you is that when I think of you, I think of adventures. If you go on your Instagram, what's your handle again?
Grandmaster Norris.
I love it. I mean, the videos and it's epic stuff that you're doing. And for you, it's just your life and your training and you're having fun and you're showing the goofy stuff as well as the really amazing things. training and trying to make an Olympic cycle, like that's epic in one specific way. But there are other things you do, like the Berkey, for instance, right? In Minnesota every year, February usually, right?
Yep.
And every year it's different because their conditions are crazy. And it's this point to point, super long distance cross country ski race that draws a massive participation field, yeah. right? And you've won that race and you go out and do it. And it's not necessarily like a race that earns you points to go do anything else. It's just one of those cool, like at life adventure races. For some people, it's a bucket list event. Mm-hmm. So they want to do it once in their life. Right. Yeah. What, maybe really quick, talk about the Berkey a little bit. You won it last year. This year, I think you were third.
Yeah.
And did Jess, was she second this year?
What? No, maybe 14.
Oh,
but she was second last year.
When you won. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is like in your blood. Is this the kind of race you're going to go back to every year?
Yeah, I think, I mean, unless things get in the way, Jess and I would keep going back year after year. Because it is one of those races that it has the high level component. Like the elite field is very good, but then there's so many people coming just for the experience that it's like a reunion of like all my best ski friends. And at this point, I've stayed with the same host family. Each year I've gone since 2016. And so now this host family that just randomly volunteered to put us up, they're now like really good family friends. So there's just kind of like a lot of really fun things about it. And it's one of the unique races that is point to point. And it's a really nice trail that winds through the woods. So it's kind of like, that's to me, like the tradition and the history of skiing was like point to points and kind of getting lost in the woods, where so many of the races we do now, particularly like World Cup, you're stuck on a 3.75K loop and it's like a little gerbil loop because it's good for TV time and less cameras to cover. But like, that's not actually maybe what us as athletes like love to race on. Like I would way prefer like a point to point that I don't even know where the next turn's taking me kind of thing. But
yeah, it's kind of like running on a treadmill versus going out on the trail and trying to get to a peak.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, let's move on to another adventure. My husband, Tim, he's been on the show, thinks your greatest accomplishment is winning the Mount Marathon race in Seward, Alaska, four times. And the fact that you hold the record now over athletes like Killian Jornet and other incredible people is truly a feat. Would you agree with him? Would you say you think this is like the most badass thing you've ever done?
Yeah, it's certainly, yeah, it's probably one of the most like meaningful races I've ever done. And it definitely, like when you were talking about sponsorships and stuff earlier, Mount Marathon, like, kind of changed my ski career because it's such a big deal in Alaska that when I won that first year and took the course record, all of a sudden, it was way, way easier for me to gain local sponsorships. So, like, I had a orthopedic clinic in Anchorage and a dentist and, like, local sponsors that all of a sudden, they... Like I was on their radar, so it wasn't like I was just totally cold calling and saying that I'm trying to make the Olympics and skiing. I need some like financial support. Now they were like, oh, and you're the Mount Marathon champion.
And that means a lot there. So let's expand on that race. And I will tell everyone listening, I found this YouTube video of you actually explaining how the race works. And it's really cool. I'm going to put the link in the show notes because this is not a traditional race where there is a marked way to go, right? Mm-hmm. And first of all, it's running. So let's just make that clear, or walking or scrambling or crawling or sliding or whatever you want to call it. So yeah, share a little bit about that race.
Yeah. And it's called Mount Marathon, but it's only a 5K and it's like almost 3,000 feet of vert in that duration. But yeah, there's a start and finish line.
Do you go up and down?
Up and down. There's a rock at the top you have to go around. And so basically you got the start and finish line and then the checkpoint at the top. And so there's no marked course, but there's for sure like the, you know, like the kind of the beaten in path. That's sort of the best line. But you'll see, like, early in the race, there's a few different lines that people choose. And so, like, the first year I raced, the kind of like the favorites, they took a whole different route. And so, like, I didn't, probably 3 minutes into the race, they deviated and I didn't see them until the finish line. Cause, like, they went right and I went left. And then by the time we got back to where we would have rejoined, I had gotten enough of a lead. And then we were in, like, there's like ferns and brush and stuff. So, like, if you're 30 seconds back, you can kind of disappear into the jungle.
Oh my gosh. That's insane. On the way down, is there any, like, are you sliding in some parts or is it all running?
Some years there's a really good snow field. And so you can slide on your feet or butt slide.
Was that your record setting year?
Yeah, it was.
Uh huh. Yeah. I think I saw a video of how fast that was.
Yeah. No, it was. Like,
it's so amazing.
And what's super funny about it is, like, my ski coach was like, you can do this race, but don't hurt yourself. And I kind of went into it being like, I'm just racing to the top. I want to set the record to the top. And then I'll be safe on the downhill. I won't really, like, risk it. And then I got to the top with a lead. And I was like, oh, I can win this. Like, I didn't even think winning was even on the table because it's such a kind of specific race. And I got to the top and I saw my time and no one was close to me. But then I thought I'm going to get caught on the downhill. So then I started, like, I just sent it and I think adrenaline kicked in and I jumped onto the snow and, like, I was sliding, like, the snow goes straight into, like, a scree field. So you got to kind of get into control as you hit the rocks.
Uh-huh.
And, like, it all just, like, yeah, worked out perfectly. Like, because all the glissade and stuff, training in the summers in Alaska, like, that's my favorite thing, is, like, running mountains and then sliding the snow.
So wait, are you sliding on your butt or your feet?
I did mostly feet, but I did, like, slip to my butt a couple
times. I was like, is that like a wedgie waiting to happen? Like a frozen ice wedge?
Yeah. No, I wore, so this is, like, also, it's like a hack for Mount Marathon. Like, I just wear, like, board shorts or, like, kind of bigger running shorts. And, but people with, like, runner shorts or girls wearing kind of, like, booty tights, they'll get to the finish line and they are totally, like, raspberry, like, road rash from sliding on the snow.
Oh my gosh, that is so funny. I love that hack.
Yeah. And, like, I'd rather wear bigger shorts and not have, like, my butt torn apart. So.
Oh, it's so funny. So I just love it. I mean, that is the kind of race that if I was still doing what you're doing, I'd be there every year. So all of you out there listening who want something really fun and epic, I'm sure there's like a application process, right? How many people do they take?
It's open right now.
Ooh.
And it's lottery based.
Lottery. Throw your name in the hat.
I think there's some people in Steamboat that have done the lottery now.
Sweet. Go play in Alaska this summer. What year, what month is it?
It's July 4th every year.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. So what other things do you do that I don't know about? You said you're on your bike still, but with no race numbers.
Yeah, I just ride my bike. Like, yeah. Jess is racing quite a bit, so then we train on the bike a lot.
Okay, so we keep talking about this Jess person, but we haven't expanded on who she is. We all have a support crew in our lives, so let's share a little bit about Jess.
Yeah, well, she's my wife. I haven't said that many times, so still comes out.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. But yeah, we've been dating together for, I don't know, since like probably 2011 or 12, something like that. And she went to Montana State as well, and then we went to APU together, and we've been ski racing and traveling together for that whole time. So it's pretty sweet ride.
So you found each other who share the same life goals right now, and she loves the adventuring side of athletics as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, she enjoys training probably way more than the racing side. Like, racing is more stressful. But it's like, it works out perfect because we do a lot of training together. So it's not like we're taking time like away from each other to fit in our workouts that we want to do?
I think the first time I met you both, you were together at the top of Lane of Pain. Mm-hmm. And Tim, every time I go out with him, that's where we end up. We can't ever end at the quarry or something.
Yeah.
So for those of you listening, you know, so I'm up there. And of course, you guys are up there. You're not breathing at all. You're fine. It's like a little walk in the park. Huh. And I, you know, it was really cool because you've also embraced the Skimo side of, you know, backcountry skiing.
Yeah, we...
You're good at it. You won the like the local race series.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, yeah. Jess is doing it as well, and it's kind of sweet. Like we both like with gravel biking and doing more backcountry skiing. We're both doing it way more now living in Steamboat because it's just so accessible and convenient here. And we're each like, this is so sweet. We have like a new hobby to mix into. Like what we can choose to do for activities each day. Like her and I basically, when we were in Anchorage and in Albuquerque, we were like, we don't road bike. Like we don't ride on the roads. But then coming to Steamboat now, I'm like, some days I'm like, I don't really want a mountain bike. I just kind of want to go for like a long gravel cruise because it's low traffic and it's really nice and peaceful. Yeah, we're digging it.
Well, and you know, you're really tapping into this the joy behind the things you do, and you're just rolling with all the new opportunities, which is amazing. I've noticed on your social media and your website there you like to use the term living, L-I-V-I-N.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
That originated from So it had been 2022 Olympic trials. Like while the trials were still going, we basically knew the team was already named. And so for the last two races in the trial period, I was with all my APU teammates and I'd been on World Cup for the first part of the season. So coming back and being with like all my like close friends and teammates for the final bit of trials, we were just kind of like hanging out and they took place in Sun Valley and we went from like very like, I don't know, like COVID was still a big deal. So we're like masking where we're out and it was kind of just like stressful. And then when we got to Sun Valley, we were going to the hot springs and like we did some night skis and like hiked up and did powder turns on our Nordic gear. And I think I was either first and second or first and third at the final two races of the trials, and we watched Dazed and Confused.
That's what I was wondering.
and I think we were finally like, we had a few beers and like, we were just kind of relaxing, but racing really well. And our whole crew was. And so we kind of like, me and a couple of the buddies that had missed our goals of making the Olympics, we were like, man, we're like racing the best we've ever raced, but we didn't reach our goals. And like, I don't know, you just gotta keep living.
Embrace it, man.
Yeah. And then, you know, like it kind of took off as just like a joke that like people would text me after a race, just like L-I-V-I-N, things like that. So it's kind of an inside joke.
It's a great philosophy too, even for the kids and the parents listening and the kids as they start getting older. One of the things that you brought up that you attributed to Jess was like, she really likes training more than racing. There's kids who like racing. They don't like the suffer of the training. Mm-hmm. Is there a point in any sport where you think, you know, is there a trick to that? Is there a trick to if you don't like the racing, but you like the training, finding a way to like the racing? Or if you only like the racing, but you don't like training, then you're not going to train anymore. You're going to quit. You're not going to be successful. So how do you help people find that sweet spot where they can enjoy both? Because I have a feeling that you enjoy both.
Yeah, it's probably just super fortunate that I enjoy both. Like I'll get race nerves, but it doesn't keep me up at night. I don't have any issue eating breakfast in the morning, that kind of stuff where like, I feel for those people who like stay up all night because they're nervous or want to vomit while they're eating breakfast, that kind of thing. Like, I feel bad for those athletes, and I know they learn coping mechanisms and things like that. But I mean, if you don't like training, I feel like that's where the trick of just trying to make it as fun as possible and finding a training group so that it's almost like social, but you're getting the work done. But I don't know, like if you just really don't like racing, that's tough.
Maybe that's your decision point.
Yeah.
That there are other ways to use your fitness and your love for sport in your life. And it can be through going out and doing the Berkey, not trying to win it necessarily, but doing it, going out and throwing your name into the lottery of, Mount Marathon, where you're just trying to accomplish things, but it doesn't have to do with that final result.
Yeah. And I think that's, it's a unique thing coaching here, because we have a large age spectrum, like we talked about earlier, like where like an eighth grade athlete versus somebody who's back for the summer from college, like that's a massive difference in like body development, maturity, all that stuff. But then we also have a massive variety of goals on the team. Some kids want to get into college, some want to make the Olympics, some are just really stoked to train with each other and be friends on the team. And I think that's important for us to keep kind of on top of our minds too, because like I think the Winter Sports Club had a sports psych come and talk to all the coaches, and he brought up how like if you interview coaches and you say like what's the three funnest things about the season, coaches are like racing and training and stuff like time trials. Yeah. And then if you interview the kids, they don't have any of those things in their top three. And so like I'm trying to keep that kind of like not forget that, because like even though I'm excited to see the athletes race, maybe that's not like the highlight to them. And
that's a great point.
And doesn't need to be either. Like, and some kids, I guess if they don't like racing but they love training and being part of the team, like they add a lot of value by being at practice and adding depth to the workouts and being encouraging to each other. So like I think everybody's there for the right reasons for them.
Such a great point. And you know what? We've never talked about that on any episode before, about the fact that you may have a kid who does not want to race or try to hit a high level, but they still want to be a part of it. And we welcome that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's super cool. Like that's a cool, really nice thing about the Winter Sports Club, that it caters to elite training, but it's also like, you know, there's not like trials to be accepted onto the team. Like basically if you're like a good person and you're working hard and you're not like taking away from the sessions, like I can't imagine how like you wouldn't be gladly accepted and welcome to practice every day.
Well, I will say that after listening to this, pretty much everybody is going to want their kid to continue at least through U14 so that they can be a part of what you're putting out there into the world. I think we have just nailed it today. I would love to wrap it up with the final question we ask every guest who comes on the show.
Ooh.
Are you ready for this?
Sure.
What is the greatest lesson you've learned through sport?
I should have listened to the end of all your podcasts.
Yes, it's okay.
But I don't know, greatest lesson. I mean, I think, I don't know, like maybe what's coming top of my mind is like that we're always told that like you just got to work harder and work harder. But like working hard doesn't necessarily, you don't just reach your goals because you worked hard. Like you're going to see adversity and stuff like that. So like, I feel like you do have, I don't know, like I've learned that you work hard and you got to be consistent to pursue your goals. But like, it doesn't always work out, but that's okay, because like in that effort of working hard and trying to pursue something, like something else good comes out of it.
That is amazing. I feel like that might be some personal experience thrown in there.
Yeah.
I love that. That's a really great way to put it. So thank you for coming in here and working hard today, working your brain.
Yeah, thanks.
And your lungs. And I'm not going to keep you any longer because you've got something fun to train for, but I really appreciate you, and I appreciate everything you're doing for the club, and I know the kids do too. We're so lucky to have you.
Cool.
And to have you not only as a coach, but as an example of the fact that you can keep doing this stuff, and you can do it at whatever level you want through your entire life.
Cool.
So,
yeah, well, thanks.
Best to you for the season, and I'm going to see you out there.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening to the Steamboat Springs Winter Sports Club Show, presented by Honey Stinger. Check out the club's winter and summer programs at sswsc.org. If you have a special topic or guest you want featured, we'd love to hear from you. Now get out there and support, lead, or be a champion on or off the mountain.